This is the Bible in Fewer Words, Episode 3, The Curse of Canaan, Genesis 9 through 14. Hello, welcome back. Last time we covered Genesis 4 through 8, and that was really about the flood ending. And now we're going to start with God's instructions to Noah and his family after the flood. So we're in chapter 9. God blessed Noah and his sons and said, "Have lots of children. All the animals will be afraid of you. Do whatever you'd like with them. Eat any living thing that moves along with all the plants." Okay. I'm thinking those are not very good.
All bad advice.
All bad advice.
Have lots of children may have made sense at the time. It certainly doesn't anymore. We have too many. The population is more than the earth can sustain. Animals aren't afraid of us. Not all animals. Most animals aren't afraid of us. Well, a lot of them are. Sharks aren't particularly concerned about us, and neither are grizzly bears.
Lions are not afraid of us.
Yeah, right. There's a lot of stuff that isn't afraid of us, and we certainly can't do whatever we like with them, and we shouldn't do whatever we like with them. We can't eat everything that moves, obviously.
No.
Along with all the plants. A lot of plants are poisonous. Many animals are as well. Bad advice. And then he emphasizes the one thing he tells you not to do is to not eat blood.
Oh, you know, I actually don't think I said that yet.
Oh, you haven't got there?
Nope.
Oh, well, let's go on.
But don't eat anything while it's still alive, and don't eat blood.
There you go. Okay.
There. So, yeah. Isn't that where the Jehovah's Witnesses get?
Yes,
there?
It is. Mm-hmm.
There, don't eat blood. Mm-hmm. If a man or an animal kills a man, the brother of the victim must kill the killer. Whoever kills a man must be killed by a man, because men are made in God's image. When I read that, I thought, okay, so if an animal kills a man, his brother, I
don't know what that means, but that was my best attempt to understand what was being said. I might have got it wrong. It's possible.
The rainbow. God said to Noah and his sons, "I'm making a promise to you, your descendants, and all the beasts of the world." So he's promising to the beasts.
He is promising the beasts. That's definitely in the Bible. Mm-hmm.
"I promise to never again kill every living thing in a flood." So it sounds like God is regretting having done the flood.
Yeah. First he regretted making things. Then he regretted destroying them all.
Okay. He's a little fickle.
Yeah.
"And here's a token of my promise. I will set a rainbow in the clouds. Whenever I make a cloud, there will be a rainbow." Is that how clouds happen?
Yeah, no, that it would. If there was rain and clouds before the flood, there would have been rainbows then as well. So,
already?
Unless physics change somehow, yeah.
"When I see it, it will remind me of my promise not to destroy all living things." So God needs to see a rainbow and then say, oh, yes,
yeah,
I now remember.
Right. That's right, I shouldn't kill anybody. Notice that he does say in a flood. Because he does plan later on to kill people with fire or something.
Plagues.
But he's not going to do it plagues, but not with a flood.
Not with a flood. Okay.
That's reassuring. Okay, so this is a story about Noah. After Noah sacrificed the clean animals for God, he planted a vineyard, made wine, got drunk, and lay naked in his tent.
Noah did all those things.
Noah did that.
That's a lot to accomplish in a short time.
First he sacrificed some animals before
that's
he
right.
got drunk. Okay. The curse of Canaan. Ham, the father of Canaan, saw his father Noah naked and told his brothers about it. Ham's brothers, Shem and Japheth, I can't say that name.
You did a good job.
"took a garment and covered their naked father, walking backwards, not looking at his nakedness."
Okay, I just want to visualize that. They're walking in a tent backwards to their father who is naked. And then they close their eyes, turn around, put something on their dad to cover him up so they don't see him.
It's not that complicated. I mean, okay, so you go in, you see your dad naked, drunk and naked in the tent, right?
Well, no, you're not supposed to. He's not supposed to see
them. Well, you're not really looking at him. You know how, so just in your, you were told already that he was there. So you kind of did it with your eyes closed. You walk in, you take a blanket, and you cover them up, and then
you walk backwards.
You walk backwards, not looking.
Okay. Okay. I do not see this.
Yeah, that's right. They didn't see.
Okay.
I don't know how they did it, but somehow those two brothers, Shem and Japheth, didn't look at their naked father. They covered him up.
Okay.
Whereas Ham not only looked, but he told them.
Uh-huh.
Dad's in there drunk and naked. What do you think of that? Okay, so when Noah sobered up, he knew what his younger son had done to him. And he said, "Cursed is Canaan." That's the son of Ham. "He will be a slave of slaves to his brothers. Blessed be the God of Shem. Canaan shall be his slave. God will enrich Japheth, who will live in Shem's tents, and Canaan will be his slave." So Canaan's going to be the slave of both of his brothers, and not just Canaan, but his descendants. And this is the justification for a justification for slavery, and in particularly of the black race, because Ham, the descendants of Ham are thought to be in Africa, have gone to Africa and were black, and they're going to be
slaves
forever.
Yeah,
and that's all God's part of God's plan because Ham saw Noah naked.
Okay, that is stupid.
And it wasn't Canaan that saw it. Canaan was the son of Ham, who probably wasn't even born yet. But to punish Ham, I guess, for seeing
his dad
naked, God cursed his grandson, the son of Ham, and all of his descendants with slavery.
So first I want to get this straight. Noah is the one who got naked and drunk and didn't know what he was doing.
For sure, yes.
Ham just walked into his dad's tent to say, "Hey, Dad, can I borrow the car tonight?"
Oh, yeah, right?
And oh my gosh, there he is. My dad is naked over here. What? In all of his excitement, runs to his brothers and says, "Hey, I just saw Dad naked. What should I do?" And so then they go in.
They very carefully went in and didn't look and covered him up. So they were, you know, it all makes sense. You can see why Noah would be upset, sort of. Mostly at himself, I suppose. But, you know, it's kind of embarrassing.
So I want to blame somebody for it.
Yeah.
Not only somebody, somebody's...
I'm going to curse your son.
Yes.
And all of his descendants.
Okay. That's one to remember.
Okay. Well, almost done with this little part here. We've got Noah. The next verse says, Noah lived 350 years after the flood. And he died when he was 950 years old.
Okay, didn't God already shorten people's lives by this time?
Yeah, but that's future people, you know.
Okay.
I don't know.
Oh, because Noah was still Noah.
I don't know. You got a good point there. I don't quite get that, because we did have a thing back a little bit before that said 120 years, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know. I'd leave that for someone else to sort out. One more thing here is that's the end of chapter 9. Chapter 10 is one of the genealogies that occur throughout the Bible, and we're going to ignore it. It's kind of an important one because it's a genealogy that tells us all of the people on earth were descended from the three sons of Noah, according to the Bible. And that's what the genealogy in chapter 10 is about. But it's all a bunch of begats, so we're going to leave that alone.
Okay, and those three sons are... The three snappy names there.
Yeah.
Japheth, mm-hmm. Ham, and Shem.
Right.
So we have to remember those guys.
I guess.
Okay. Chapter 11, the Tower of Babel and the origin of languages. Before the Tower of Babel was constructed, all humans spoke the same language. I'm hoping that was French. What do you think? At this time, everyone on earth traveled to the plain of Shinar and lived there. They said to each other, "Hey, let's get some brick and slime and build a tower that reaches to heaven. We need to make ourselves famous so we aren't scattered all over the face of the earth." God came down to see the tower that the people had built, and he said, "These people are unifying and have one language. If they can build a tower, they can do anything. Let's go down and confuse their speech so they can't understand each other. So God confounded the language of the people who were building the tower and scattered them over the face of the earth. All right, so they all live in one place. They all lived in one area? Or they all got together?
They were scattered throughout the world, but they all got together. They decided to get together and build a tower. So everybody on earth came to this one spot to build this tower. And they all spoke one language, so it was all working out well for them.
And then when they couldn't speak the same language anymore...
Well, but first, that what happened was God saw them do this. You know, God sees stuff.
Yeah.
So he saw them do this, and he was worried. He said, if they can build a tower, they can do anything.
I guess so.
Yeah, so let's go down. And he did. He went down. Or they went down, because he's let us. I don't know about the pronoun there.
Mm-hmm.
So he went down and saw what was going on and confused their language so that it would be hard to build it if you couldn't get, you know, talk to each other.
Like, you can't just point and say, hey, I need that mortar over there or that slime to put in these bricks.
I guess it worked. And then that's where languages came from. That's the main point here. That's where languages, you've probably wondered where languages come from.
I have.
And so that's where they came from. And then scattered people all over the earth with speaking different languages. And so that's what happened.
So they found each other. People who spoke Spanish went that way. And people who spoke Arabic went another way. They chose their, okay.
I guess so.
So they're scattered all over the earth.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Oh, genealogy.
Okay, so should I talk a little bit about the genealogy from Shem to Abraham?
No, we're going to leave that alone. That is another genealogy that we're not going to get into.
Great.
Okay, so Abraham, Sarah, and Lot. We're going to learn about them. Terah was Abraham's father, and Lot was Abraham's nephew.
Okay, wait a minute. Where does Abraham come from?
Yeah, well, we have it's a good point, because we're skipping the genealogy from Shem, mm-hmm. Noah's son, to Abraham. So the Bible tells us about that genealogy, you know, who begot who. So Abraham is a descendant of Shem.
Okay, and Shem is one of Noah's sons. The naked guy.
No.
Noah was naked.
Shem was one of the good guys who didn't...
Who found him,
yeah.
Yes, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so Abraham is a descendant of Shem. Do mm-hmm. we know how many generations went by?
We could count. It's in there.
Okay, we don't have to.
No, I didn't.
More than five?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It's a fairly long time. You could calculate it, though. That's one of the ways that you can date the flood as in something like 1,600 years after the creation.
Mm. Okay, so maybe we could do that for our audience and let them know about it. Figure out how many generations.
Later,
yes.
Yeah, sure. It is possible to do. Okay, so Abraham, Sarah, and Lot travel to Haran. Okay, so Terah was Abraham's father, and Lot was Abraham's nephew. Abraham married Sarah, who couldn't have children. Terah, Abraham, Sarah, and Lot traveled from Ur of the Chaldees, which would be somewhere in Iraq, I think, to Haran, which is in Turkey, modern-day Turkey. Terah died in Haran when he was 205 years old.
Okay, still kind of old for God's, you know.
But it is getting more
reasonable.
I that's still not at all reasonable, but better than 900.
Yes.
Like they were at before. Okay, so they're traveling to Canaan. God said to Abraham, "Leave your country for a land that I'll show you. I'll bless you and make your name great. I'll bless those that bless you, and I'll curse those that curse you." So when Abraham was 75 years old, he left Haran and traveled with Sarah and Lot to Canaan. When they arrived, God appeared to Abraham and said to him, "I'll give all of this land to your descendants."
And this land, like everything he could see?
Yeah, that's one of the things that they're still fighting over today. How much land could Abraham see? Because however much it was, that's what the Jews get.
Oh.
And so, of course, the people that lived there didn't think that was very fair. So they're still having these wars today between the Palestinians and the Israelites.
Jeepers.
Yeah.
Okay. Sarah lies for Abraham. there was a famine in the land of Canaan. So God gave them this land and then didn't provide for food. So there was a famine in the land of Canaan. So Abraham and Sarah went to Egypt. As they approached Egypt, Abraham said to Sarah, "You are a beautiful woman."
That's kind of nice.
It's very nice of him to say that. But about how old was Sarah at the time, you think?
Well, Abraham was 75. She's probably around that age.
Okay. So she must have drank from the fountain of youth.
Yeah. She used one of those facial creams or something.
I see. Yeah. Therefore, the Egyptians will say, "Oh, this is his wife," and they'll kill me, but keep you alive. So tell them you are my sister instead of my wife. So things will go well for me. So why would they just kill Abraham?
Well, because she was so pretty that they just couldn't help themselves. And they think he was her husband. Mm-hmm. So they need to kill him so they could take her.
So when they arrived in Egypt, Pharaoh saw the good-looking Sarah and took her into his house. Because of Sarah, the Pharaoh gave Abraham sheep, oxen, male and female asses, slaves and camels. So I guess Sarah didn't tell the Pharaoh that she was his sister?
No, she lied. No, she did. She told him that she was his sister. And so he took her in.
Okay.
Thinking she was his sister, so she was fair game.
Okay, so they don't specifically say that here. It was just...
No, but that's what happened.
Okay. But God sent plagues on the Pharaoh and his household because of Sarah. Pharaoh called Abraham and said, "What have you done to me? Why didn't you tell me Sarah was your wife? Why did you say, 'She's my sister'?" Oh, so he's actually the one who said, "She's my sister."
No. I mean, maybe. But the Bible is Abraham's telling Sarah, "Tell him you're my sister." So they probably both lie.
Probably.
Yeah.
Okay, so why did you say, "She's my sister, so I would take her as my wife"? This is the Pharaoh saying this. "Now go, take your wife and leave." So Abraham and Sarah left with all the valuable things Pharaoh had given him. That doesn't seem quite right. You'd think he would have to give that stuff back that the Pharaoh gave him in exchange for his sister.
You'd think, yeah. But yeah. No, this is where Abraham got all of his stuff.
Really?
Yeah, he became a wealthy man because of this episode.
Chapter 13. Abraham, Sarah, and Lot returned to Canaan. Abraham, Sarah, and Lot left Egypt, taking their cattle, silver, and gold to Bethel.
Okay, so Abraham and Lot split up. When Abraham and Lot arrived back in Canaan, they split up since they had too many things to live together.
Really?
They just had too much stuff.
Like there wasn't enough room
for
all their stuff.
I don't know where Lot got all his stuff. We know where Abraham got his.
Uh-huh.
He just, got all that stuff from...
For Sarah.
From Egypt, yeah. They had too much stuff, so they have to split up. Abraham went to the land of Canaan. Lot went to Sodom. The men of Sodom were exceedingly wicked sinners. After Lot left, God said to Abraham, "Look around you. Everything you see, I will give you and your descendants forever. And I'll make your descendants as numerous as the dust of the earth."
That's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a phrase that's used a lot with Abraham. He's always going to have lots of descendants, as much as the grains of sand. Sometimes it's the number of stars in the sky or the dust of the earth. Lots. Mm-hmm. So that's the end of chapter 13. Chapter 14, we have the battle of Sodom and Gomorrah. Soon after Lot moved to Sodom, a war broke out between the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah and some of the other local kingdoms. The Sodomites were defeated and Lot was taken prisoner. Abraham sent an army of 318 slaves to pursue and smite Lot's captors. After the battle, Melchizedek, who was a priest and a king of Salem, praised God for delivering Abraham's enemies into his hand. Abraham gave Melchizedek a tenth of all the spoils. That ends chapter 14.
So am I wrong in thinking that this is one of the first big fights, like battles
in
a war?
No, I think it is. I think that's the first war that we have in the Bible.
We don't have time.
God definitely picked sides on that one.
Yes, he did.
He was on Abraham's side.
And we don't have time today, but we're going to have to talk about Melchizedek.
He's an important figure.
So next time we can talk about him, you think?
Okay.
All right. Hey, we want to keep these to as close to 20 minutes as we can. So thank you very much for being with us today. See you next time.
Okay. Bye-bye.